960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Five, my goodness, we are back, locked and loaded in the Pinder Hour. If my name was Will or Peter, I wouldn't be so keen on working in a Pinder Hour, but hey. Pinder in the Pinder Hour, it just makes sense. I tell you, we're getting back to normal here around the station, which is great. We all need a little time away in the summer, that is good, but that is done. Boom Boom back this week, we will have Retro back following Labor Day next week. And we are right into the teeth of what I would say is Canada's greatest season for sport. Now in the States, everyone loves the spring because you've got baseball is back. You've got March Madness. They love their NBA. But there's no NFL. I am a big proponent of fall is the best time of year. Hockey's getting started. It's an even earlier start with the World Cup coming right around the corner. The 2nd of September, people leaving their homes and respective cities to gather for this tournament. It's coming up quick. We'll also have pennant chases and playoff baseball around the corner. CFL after Labor Day, that's when they say it means more. I know the wins all count the same, but you'll have NFL cuts arriving because, of course, the NFL's back. And we will see the season kick off on September 8th. We'll have training camp, Penticton, and next thing you know, we'll be right into the teeth of regular season hockey. You've got to love the fall. For my money, the best, and let's zip down the South Street Burger guest hotline to say good morning to our buddy Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca. Hainsey, I am a fall is the best sports season guy. Please enrage me with a take that does not agree.
No, I think you're good. I guess the spring as baseball season is getting going and the NHL playoffs are ramping up is, that's in the conversation, but I know what you're saying, and with add NFL to the mix and whatnot, and I'd vote for that if I had to choose.
Well, I'll say this: in years past, the Jays have been completely out of it by now, and it's essentially the atmosphere of a hospital hallway at the Rogers Center usually. But that'll change last year. It's going to be nuts. That adds a little spice to September, having meaningful baseball, which Jays fans certainly will, and probably into October you'd think as well. That helps sway the needle as well. Now, what have you been up to? We haven't chatted in a while. Have you climbed the Calgary Tower? Have you been? I heard you were in an arena the other day. Even in August, you're finding a way to be near the ice.
Yeah, my daughter's playing girls hockey this year after a 6-year hiatus. So prep camp has already begun. So already inside chilly arenas in August, getting ready for. This is how it works with hockey now. Now, they have evaluations and now people want to get ready before evaluations. And, the big, the minor hockey machine is well underway. All arenas will have kids coming and going as they get ready to go in September. And so I'm back to being a hockey dad and I'm actually looking forward to it.
You need those off-season hockey camps. And then you got to have the prep camp that gets you ready for the training camp, that gets you ready for the preseason, that gets you ready for the regular season.
Yeah, apparently.
We're a little nuts about this, aren't we?
It's a little nuts. But if
you're draft eligible, don't even take your skates off for the whole year. Halinka's all the way through to U18s.
Yeah, I know. The good news is for me, we're certainly not at the other end of that, competitive end of that. We're just in it for the good times, and it will be fun. You'll get that day to be a hockey parent eventually, and you'll enjoy it.
Yes, I can't wait to shell out for 4 skates, not 2. No hand-me-downs when they're twins, right?
Yeah, that's going to be tricky. Well, maybe get a bulk discount. Yeah. Buy your stuff at Costco or something.
Mm. Where are you? I think the topic du jour and the topic du month, whatever that word is in French, would be Johnny Gaudreau's lack of a contract. First off, let's maybe define the terms here. This is not a holdout situation. A holdout is when someone has a deal and they're not going to operate and owe up to their deal. So we can just eliminate that from our vocabulary. Please, people, do not call this a holdout. This is an impasse at the moment, I would believe. And what have been your reading of the tea leaves like? What's it been? Do you have a prediction on where this is going? Has this baffled you? Is this playing out as you might have suspected it would?
I think it's playing out as I shouldn't say I expected it to go this long. So that's a lie. But now that once you kind of got past into the middle of the summer and the months have gone off and now I'm not necessarily surprised, because it feels like, okay, well, it's not going to get done right away. And now what's the rush? You know, whether it's signed in the beginning of August or the end of August, the games still don't get going until, you know, preseason in September and whatnot.
October 12, I think that's the one that matters, right? Like that's game one, season opening night.
Yeah, so, you know, the thing is, I mean, what he there's no offer sheet option here. He's a restricted free agent. There's no place for him to go. I respect the agent for wanting to kind of get all you can and to really kind of ride this out as much as he can. But, you know, we know how much Johnny Gaudreau loves his hockey, and I just feel like how this is going to end is he picks up the phone, because he's been very clear that he's hands off. It sounds like this is his agent, and he'll sign the contract that his agent recommends. But at some point, he is the client, and I expect that maybe he picks up the phone and says, "Look, let's just get this done. Like, what's the latest offer? Let's go back with 10% more, and let's just hammer this out."
Well, and from the other side, Haynes, I mean, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because this is a negotiation. There are two sides. Maybe there's pressure within the Flames organization. Hey, do we really need to grind this guy down and potentially miss him for, you know, a few weeks to start the year? Why don't we give him the extra $500,000 and we'll lock this kid up enough to negotiate for another half decade? I mean, I could see both sides are trying to do a job here. Brad Treliving's job is to get the best deal possible. Johnny Gaudreau's agent is to extract the most money possible over the course of his career.
And that's a job that Brad Treliving has been very good at, let's be honest. I mean, if you look back at the contracts, long-term big contracts that he's signed with, players that have come in, Mark Giordano, I thought that would be for more. I thought he got him for less than I thought it was going to be. Same with Dougie Hamilton, same with Sean Monahan. So,
yep. TJ Brody, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's been prevailing in most of those situations. So I think they both need to travel a little bit from whatever stance they're at right now. But, I guess they're just kind of dragging their feet. I mean, you'd think this is a big week, though, with camp starting a week from now for World Cup. And, you know, from what, if we believe what we've been led to, what they've been saying, that that Gaudreau does not want to negotiate during World Cup. Is that during the games? Is that during the whole thing, which begins with the practices next week? I mean, I don't really know. I think everybody would like to get this thing put to bed. So I guess we'll see if they can, you know, find a deal. And I think to me, it comes back to that whole thing. And Brad will tell you this. It's what's the marketplace. That's the first thing you got to figure out is,
well, there is no marketplace. That's the challenge, right? If there's a marketplace, it means he's a free agent and he goes to the highest bidder. The only team he can negotiate with is Calgary. Where's the marketplace now? It's whatever you can do with that one team. That's literally his only option, unless he wants to go play in Omsk.
Right, but so you have to figure out, but what's, you got to, you know, just like the exercise you went through with Monahan, where you're like, okay, here are the comparables, you know, pretty much, you know, McKinnon, whatever, like you knew where the number was going to be. It ultimately ended up, I don't think any of us are surprised where it ended up with Monahan. It was more than what McKinnon got based on his body of work so far, yet it wasn't loads above, right?
No, it was $75,000 more, right?
Right. So the tricky part, and we've said this all along, the tricky part with Gaudreau is it's more difficult to establish that market, because there aren't those easy comparables, right? And I think you've talked about, we've talked about Tarasenko before. Okay, yep. There's one.
Yep.
I think Ekblad, you've mentioned Ekblad. I think that's a great one, because there's a guy who was a first overall pick. How can Johnny Gaudreau justify asking for more than a first overall pick just got? A young defenseman. I think that's a fair question. Let's look at Steven Stamkos. Steven Stamkos just signed 8 years, $8.5 million. Does Johnny Gaudreau, coming off 130-goal season, have the same clout to demand the same money that Steven Stamkos just signed? And he's played 8 seasons, got 300 NHL goals. Right,
right? But Hainsey,
that's way too high.
Let me stop you there. If he wanted the most money, he's not back in Tampa for 8.5. If he wanted to just chase money, he's in Buffalo at 12, or he's in Toronto at 10+. Is that not the case? Let's forget about state tax and stuff, but just strictly in AAV, he could have got way more than 8.5, right?
Yeah, but, you know, also, you know, there's a lot of factors in there. There is, that's what ifs with open market. But I'm talking about established deals. You also have the Canadian money thing, if you want to go down that road. And what is an $8 million contract look like in Canadian funds? What's popping out of the ATM here? What's that, $10 million, right? So,
yeah, but he's American, and they all get paid in America. I don't like that. And here's the thing. If you want to talk about players that went on discounts to the team they're at, I think you've lost me. Because are we going to compare it to Tavares, who's on one of the biggest sweetheart deals in the league? Of course not. I mean, let's talk about guys that wanted to get the most they could coming out of entry level. And I think Ekblad's interesting. He's 2 years in. I think we all think he's going to be a great player. He's had a really good start. Are you more confident you know what Ekblad looks like in 5 years versus Johnny? I feel like we both have an idea what they'll be. They'll be some of the best at their position. The other difference with Ekblad is that it's an extension. He's not even into the third year of his entry level yet. So you've got 9 years of, I don't want to say insurance, but knowing that's long-term lockdown for Ekblad. So does that change things a bit? I don't know.
Yeah, I just feel like I can't see the number of going above that. I really can't. Like, I just don't think he's got 2 years, period. And last year, three goals on the road until the final month of the season. I think people know what he should be, but for him, if he has an opportunity to take something that is a long-term contract, this is a small guy who could easily end up missing 2 months this year with a broken wrist. I mean, guaranteed money. If it ends up, he signs a, let's say a 7 year, 7.5. So what's that? That's $53 million.
Yeah.
So maybe, at the end of it, or maybe it's even 6 years. Let's say that's 6 years at 7.5. And there is a scenario where he may get to year five and six and say, hey, hang on a second. I am actually a little underpaid, but he got a big fat guarantee, and that's got to carry some weight as well to get that locked in when you are such a young player and you are someone that's going to be prone to potentially the broken wrist, the whatever, right? Like, that's the whole point of why you would be wanting to accept a longer term deal that maybe isn't the perfect deal, because you getting that locked up money that you've gotten, and you get that security, and security does have some sort of a price, I think.
Why are we talking about injury risk when he's been one of the healthiest players on this roster, if you look from his junior hockey days all the way through to this season? I mean, I would believe, like, he missed a couple games after a slash late this year because the games didn't matter. If they were in a playoff run, I really believe he still plays. And then the year prior, the only game he didn't play was because Bob scratched him in, what, his 15th game of the year or something like that. I think injury risk is less with this guy than most other players because his track record is to not get injured ever.
Wow. What's his tracker? I'm going to call it an NHL tracker because I don't think you'd take track record of playing at Boston College into this. I think he's played 2 years in the NHL, and if you were to rewind the tape and if there's some sort of analytics out there that are tracking slashes to the hand, it can happen. Like, people get injured. So I wouldn't call him an injury risk, but that part of his game, like his... I just think it could happen, and I think for him, just I think you're pretty. I don't know. It would be crazy to turn down a big chunk of money just because you think you might be 5 years down the road be able to get another couple million. You know what I mean? But that's just me.
I'm with you. The term is the most fascinating part of this discussion to me. All I'm saying with the injury stuff is, if you had to assess a risk to players, he would be on the safer versus the riskier side, because there's other guys that just don't stay healthy. I mean, he really has not suffered a significant injury in his playing career, and he's always been vastly smaller than everyone he's playing. Even in junior, way smaller than everyone he's playing. College, way smaller than everyone he's playing. I don't want to hear about size and injury proneness, because they aren't correlated with this kid. They aren't. He avoids contact brilliantly. And yes, he can get slashed on the wrist, but anyone can get injured. He's not more at risk of that than another player, I don't believe.
Okay. All right.
And we'll leave that be. That's fine. So the term is the fascinating part, and that's where I probably should have stopped, because that's where the discussion needs to continue. Do you think he will be a free agent when he turns 27? He will be a free agent when he accrues, 5 years or 7 years of service in the NHL. His game one, game 82 against the Canucks didn't count as a season. He's got 2 years of service. He's got five to go. He's going to be a free agent July 1st, 2021, is what the rough math says. What does the cap look like? What does a top player get? What does Johnny look like? I don't think it's crazy to suggest that his agent could have some models out there where this guy makes $10 million on that date. That's where the term gets interesting, right?
Yeah, and maybe he's still, I think you're right, and there's that's the case for probably all these players that are signing past that, and how many years past that UFA date do they go, right? And maybe this is where this ends, is this is a take some. I don't see any scenario where they take it right to that year, but maybe it's 2 years beyond, and they pony up a little bit extra. He's still going to have a really big, fat contract still coming. This isn't his final contract. This is the second contract, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think that's the balance there, is you don't have to – you're not trying to set this guy up. This isn't his last deal. This isn't not retiring on this contract. He's still going to have another one coming. So, and I'm with you that maybe this is where – you know, you look at, and maybe the meat in the middle in terms of term is maybe this is a 6 year. Like maybe it comes down to a 6 year deal. Maybe that 7.5 number over 8 doesn't work for Gaudreau's camp, but it works over 6 years. And because he can get that, you know, then he's going to be what, 29? That's still right in the wheelhouse of getting big dough. If I was to guess right now, and we were having a little pool, I would say 6 years, I would say $44 million. How about that?
So that's just a shade over 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's close. I mean, I would think that's a reasonable place to end up. I wonder where they're at now. I mean, we've heard Roger Millian say that he should make less than Gio, or at least that's a situation that he would see unfolding. I could see the camp asking for huge dough, but when it really comes down to brass tacks and we're looking at, you know, a couple days when the season starts, where is that midpoint? Is it around there? I think that's an interesting argument. What about the opposite? Rather than 6 years, which I think is a great call. You buy one UFA year. You're not asking him to forego a huge amount of dough, just 1 year. What about 4 years? Does that make things more attractive for the Flames? You still have team control at the end. He wouldn't be a free agent yet. And you might be able to get him a little bit of a lower cap number because you're not buying any UFA years. And this would be the 4 years I'd imagine you want to surround him with more talent because you're trying to become a contender. Is that not enough term for you?
Yeah, well, and that's possible, right? And you know who we're talking about. If we start looking at a 3 or 4, that leaves him still restricted afterwards, is we're talking about Ryan Johansson from 2 years ago,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Where Ryan Johansson, he had the big breakout year and wanted big dough and wanted to, and they were like, okay, well, we'll go 8 years for you, but this is kind of our incremental. And he's like, well, no, I'm going to be way better for a long time. And they couldn't figure out what that long-term looked like. So they did the kind of compromise and they did the 3 years or 12 mil. And he, you know, under those, so he, I think it's 3, 3, and 6.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
And then he's still restricted. Right. So that certainly, it wouldn't surprise me if maybe this is where this ends up. But as the player, just because bridge deals are so rare, you know, if I can see that being attractive, I guess, but if there's an option to go 6 or 7 years, I still think if I'm Johnny Gaudreau, that's where I'm leaning, just because to have that security. Like it's not a doubt in my own abilities. It's not a fear that I might get injured, but security, so
yeah.
Much money locked up. I mean, still, that's a lot of dough. And this is, you may be underpaid at $7 million, but come on, cry me a river, right?
Yeah, no, you know what? This is what other sports is turning into. The term is in the conversation. It's guaranteed money, right? You look at the NFL, how much is guaranteed? You look at NBA, guaranteed dough. Even with baseball, it's the total dollars. I mean, Edwin Encarnacion is not going to sign a one-year $35 million deal. He's going to take, you know, $150 over a longer term because it's the guaranteed dough at the end of the day. If something catastrophic happens, you still get all the dough. And I think that's what you're alluding to. That is the allure of a long-term deal. The agent's job is to see if he can't squeeze that third contract a little sooner, I think. If it's a max-term deal with Johnny, he's 31 when he's negotiating his third deal. I don't know what Johnny looks like at 31. Is he taking care of himself off the ice? Is he in great shape at 31? Is he falling apart at 31? I mean, we see guys play late into the 30s that have sort of Johnny's skill set. Not a lot of hard contact, elusive, puck skills. It's fascinating, yeah. And maybe 6 is that happy medium at the end, 6 years.
Yeah, and what 6 years is, it staggers it with Monahan, right? If you're kind of succession planning and you don't want all your guys kind of being up at the same time, you know, that works as well.
Gio will be off the books at the time that you'd need to give Johnny new dough. That would work nicely in a budget, right?
So, you know, it feels like that just could be where this ends up. I mean, I don't doubt for a second that the team would like to get him at 8. I just don't know if they can agree to a number that satisfies both camps to go that far. You know, at this point, you'd think that's maybe where it's at. But again, maybe this becomes, you know, the other thing is maybe this is just, you know, contract negotiation discussion fatigue that we're all suffering, and now we're starting to overthink it. And maybe at the end of the day, they're closer, and it ends up being a 7 or 8 year deal. And this is all just kind of filling up time on sports radio, right? But you know, the fact that we're so late in August, you do start to wonder if there is, you know, what's going on, and is there going to be? There's so many 8 and 7 year contracts being signed, but you sure get the sense that, yeah, maybe this one isn't going to be as long as the team would like. But it's got to work for both parties. So that's where I think the compromise might be.
Yeah, well, I'm keen to have you back next week. We'll have some World Cup hockey to talk about. I doubt we'll have a Gaudreau deal, but who knows? We haven't really seen the twists and turns coming. A week ahead of Monahan's deal, I don't think we were all bracing for it. So it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, and I'm going to say we will have a deal by next. I'm just going to go on
next
a limb
week.
And say by the start of training camp for World Cup that this thing's put to bed, and he's concentrating on hockey, and this thing is all behind him. I think he'd love to do that. I think this guy wants to play hockey. He doesn't want to. I don't think he likes for a second all this other crap that's going on, and I think he'd like to just clean the plate and have it done. So whether they can come up with that agreement, I'm going to just go on a limb and say yes. I don't know, don't have any insider knowledge on that. I'm just going to say that this bit of a pressure point that is the start of World Cup and start of practices and just getting it out of the way for the start of September might be what maybe pushes this thing.
Yeah, okay. Hey, we'll chat next week. You think he's signed? I think there's no way this thing gets done before the end of World Cup. We'll see how it plays out. Good catching up. Happy off season, but we're back to hockey, man. I love it.
Sounds good, bud.
All right, Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca. Darren's got an interesting piece up there, but some media clips that Johnny was involved in. If you haven't read it, I won't spoil it. Got to get to the website and check it out, flamesfrom80feet.ca. John Bender's waiting on the other side, and lots of good Johnny Gaudreau texts. We're full till 10. That's how many there are, and it's polarizing stuff. This will be interesting. Very interesting. We'll come back with some CFL chat a day after the Stamps put their foot down and said, we are the best team in the CFL, period. John Bender next, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Good Monday morning to you. Pinder back in the Pinder Hour, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Q5 is about to be stolen for a few days from me. Not in a bad way. Don't call the police. The better half, little work conference out in Banff. So I've been given demands or requests for the vehicle. All right, fair. And Jay, you'll like this. I also got a couple parenting tips for when she's gone for 2 days. You ever had you've had the boy by yourself, I'm sure, right? That's pretty normal.
Many times.
Yeah, and it's normal for most dads to do that, but there's two, and she thinks I'm completely incapable. So the two tips last night, they need you to not be forgetful. That was her translating the needs of the children. And secondly...
That feels passive aggressive to me.
Well, and you know what? She's just very worried. And the second tip, don't forget to feed them.
So don't forget, and don't forget.
Yes.
Number three, for sure, don't forget.
So remember to feed them.
Don't forget to feed them.
Don't forget. They need you to not be forgetful.
Feed them and remember that they require
you not forgetting about them and not feeding them. Yes. So John Bender joins on the phone line. Johnny, those are parenting tips for the future. I don't know. I don't believe you're a father that we know of.
Definitely not.
When you become one, remember to feed the kids.
All right.
And they need you to not be forgetful.
For sure.
Hey, you were at the game last night. I saw you on the old Snapchat. How good was the world's fastest cow?
He's a fast guy. I actually played high school football with him.
Do you know who this man is? Are we allowed to bust his cover?
I'm going to do it anyway.
Nice.
His name is Alex Soretsky.
Yeah!
He's a Cochrane High alum. He used to play for the Calgary Colts as well.
Wow.
Real fast. I think he's a 4.5. He's probably a 4.5-0 40 guy. Real fast. Used to run track and field with me as well. Well, I didn't run track. I was more the field guy. But
sure.
Yeah.
Shot put, I see you. I see a shot put bender.
Yeah, absolutely. Real fast guy. And to see him, you know, he usually beats guys when they have a 25, 30-yard head start. And he wasn't able to beat Big Earn this weekend. Big Earn had an 18-yard head start.
Now, I didn't see it on the tube, but I did see the Snapchat. It seemed like the fans would have loved the Big Earn victory there. As much as everyone loves the world's fastest cow, Big Earn's kind of an icon around town.
Yeah, the world's fastest cow's all-time record is probably like 31-2.
Yeah, so, wow.
To see him lose is it's really rare, and it's usually guys have 20 yards or more head starts, and I've seen him beat guys easily who had 30-yard head starts.
So if that was the headliner, the undercard was the Ticats and the Stampeders, two of the best teams in the league when their quarterbacks are healthy. That's always the case for Bo Levi, it seems, and now just the case for Hamilton, who looked pretty darn good last week with a healthy Caleros at the helm. What did you make of last night's action?
You know, they got a good team out there in Hamilton. They got Zach Galeros, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the CFL, and he's got four weapons to throw to. He's got Tolliver, he's got Tasker, he's got Owens, and he's got Fantuz. And all these guys are premier CFL wide receivers that he can throw to and throw to regularly. You know, he's got a great running back, too, in C.J. Gable, but he only gave him the ball four times last game because they're so busy throwing the ball. I mean, they threw the ball 53 times. I mean, I know a product of that was that they were down most of the game trying to get back into it. But he did a real good job throwing the ball, picking up yards, and doing a good job taking care of the ball. He took some nasty hits, and, you know, he wasn't turning the ball over too much.
I'm very impressed with the Stampeder Football Club. I thought there would be maybe a half step back this year. Nothing to do with the coaching changes, more just personnel departures. When you say goodbye to as many good receivers as they did, when you turn over the defense to younger hands, when you lose Joe West early to injury, are you surprised they are 7-0-1 since losing week one in Vancouver?
I wouldn't say surprise is the right word. I mean, they have a good team. They found a way to, you know, some of these victories have been last second, last minute, find a way to win. And that's a sign of a poised quarterback and a veteran team. And they got a guy like Dickinson and Bolivar Mitchell. They've been there. Jerome Messam's been there. They got some veteran leadership. You know, and now they got some young talent. They got this Daniels guy who came in with the best wide receiver last game. You know, so seemingly they're getting better here down the stretch, and that's not a good sign for the rest of the CFL.
Yeah, no kidding. And I tell you what, the Daniels is just another like, oh, there are the Stamps. There they go, finding a guy we'd never heard of who looks like a stud in his first two CFL games. Never mind what it looked like, you know, when he's got a half season under his belt. This reminds me of Eric Rogers in that sense of a guy that hung around on the practice roster, suddenly comes in, couple touchdowns, and there he is helping them win the Grey Cup.
Yeah, he very well could be a guy that makes even when Joe West comes back, who knows if Joe West can get on the field with this guy doing so well. You know, this is one of those situations where, you know, he's coming in, done a great job playing, and, you know, it's gonna be his spot now to lose unless he plays, you know, poorly. You know, he's going to have that spot down the stretch.
Yeah, injury, who knows? That's a thing. And then, you know, we thought that Greg Wilson was going to be the guy. Well, geez, he had one good game, and I don't see him getting that job back either.
No, seemingly not. Well, I don't know. With a guy like Bo Levi Mitchell, and the Stamps have a great offensive line that gave Bo a ton of time last night. You know, they were able to seemingly pick away at will. They had some drops and some, you know, a little bit of a sloppy play, but, I mean, all things considered, there was never any point in that game where you thought that they were going to lose.
No, I would agree. In fact, that the Tommy Campbell kickoff return for 115 yards, you felt like it was a tough break there. I don't know what you saw from the stadium, but it was literally like inches beyond 5 yards with that contact that's all of a sudden not allowed. In game speed, refs don't call it, and now they go to the video replay. What is your thought on that? A play where there is no foul, the review to look for a foul.
Well, right now the video replay I know is in kind of a, like, let's try this out mode. Let's see how it goes. So, I mean, it's more exploratory at this point, trying to see if this helps make the game better. They've already made some changes where they're not allowed to challenge as much. I'm not sure if this is going to stick. I don't like the roughing the pass review. I think that's garbage.
You should be able to spot that, right? Like, it's the quarterback. He's the guy holding the ball. Yeah.
For sure. That's the guy holding the ball. If you don't see that on the field, then I wouldn't worry about it. If somebody gets, I understand player safety, yada, yada, yada. But if somebody gets tapped in the helmet or in the face mask, it doesn't mean it's a 15-yard penalty automatically every time.
Well, and this is what they're looking for already. They're already, it's not much of a threshold for them to throw a flag, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they want to throw that flag to make sure it doesn't happen again. And if they don't see it in live speed, then to slow it down and, you know, when it was, you know, you have your punt team coming on the field and you're saying, well, let's give it a shot. Maybe hit them in the head and throwing the flag and hoping for the best. I mean, I don't think that's a place in the game.
Any other takeaways? I think it's clear now who the best team in the CFL is. We talked a couple weeks ago off air, just they got a tie break with BC. They finished the season series with BC. They're running away with the West. The Eskimos look good, but certainly not great heading into the pair that they do with Labor Day and the week after. I mean, I just don't see how they lose this division without a serious, serious face plant.
Yeah, they also play three of the next four at home, and they did a stat at the game when I was there in the Red and White Club before. They said from 2012 to now, so the last five seasons, they won 85% of the home game.
Oh.
So that's, you know, to have a similar stat, that's like if the Flames won 35 of the 41 home games at home. Everybody would love to go to that and enjoy that, right?
No kidding.
So if the Stamps have three of the next four at home, I'd expect a minimum of three wins. And see what happens up in Edmonton when they have a shot to go up there and do that Labor Day rematch.
You mentioned it would be their home winning record, the Stamps, it would be the equivalent of 35 Flames home wins. Well, the Flames did have 35 wins last year. That was home and away. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, incredible, right?
Yeah, awesome. Finally, on that same note, just to wrap up Stamps Ticats last night, Bo Levi Mitchell, his record as a starter, the greatest in CFL history, and I understand. He hasn't played on rebuilding teams. He hasn't been on bad clubs, but he has been a really big part of this club's success. And do you think it's too early to be comfortable with his names next to the greats like Moon, like Garcia, like Dickinson as coach, like Flutie, one of the greatest?
Well, if you aren't comfortable right now, you will be in a few years because he's that good. You know, he's going to win multiple great cups. He's going to win a lot of football games. He does a great job of not turning the ball over, and he does a great job of making plays when he needs to. And he's one of those leaders as well. So if he can lead a football team and they can do real well, I mean, they got a great team in Calgary. He's got a great arm. He's a young guy. He wants to be here. He loves the city. You know, I think that we're all watching greatness right now.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And it's I don't know that everyone is acknowledging it, or maybe we're just getting used to seeing it every week. But this is a club that goes out and wins 12 games every year, it seems, and their quarterback is phenomenal. Let's move to a guy you know that's made some news south of the border. You played at University of Nevada with Colin Kaepernick. This was a guy you shared a lot of classes with, similar in age in terms of that cycle, year one through four in college. Caps in a bit of hot water south of the border. It's been a tough couple goes in San Fran with a team that just frankly hasn't been that good since Harbaugh left. They've made some questionable decisions personnel-wise. There was some thought maybe they trade him. Would they cut him loose? He just got a big contract a few years ago, and now he's sitting during the anthem. What are your thoughts about your old buddy Cap? I know you had a big post on your Facebook page, but the floor is yours. Enlighten us.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, one of the things that he always fights for is that, you know, he wants to make sure that there's no injustice, everybody has liberty, everyone has freedom. And, I mean, Cap's a guy who's been in a situation where, I mean, he was adopted, you know, he was born to a single mother in Wisconsin, he was adopted, ended up in California with a well-off white family. And with that, he was enabled to, you know, chase his wildest dreams, and he chased them all the way to a Super Bowl and a $100 million contract. And unfortunately, because of this, he seemingly gets the racist side from both sides. Because now black people that grew up in, you know, the ghetto or wherever you want to call it, call him whitewashed. The white people, because he's a black quarterback, that are the racist white people, because he's a black quarterback, think that he's not smart enough to, you know, run an offense, do everything. So, I mean, literally, this guy gets viciously attacked on social media every day. And he's got a lot of friends and a lot of teammates that their social issues in the States aren't, you know, perfect. And they're definitely not even close to perfect. You look at a city like Chicago that's had 435 murders in the first 8 months of the year. And, you know, there's lots of, you know, you look at New Orleans, you look at Baltimore, cities are in similar situations. And Cap's trying to shine a light on these situations. And you look at how many people have been, you know, murdered in cold blood in the streets by police officers that were unarmed, that those police officers now have paid leave. You know, whether or not those situations were, you know, ideal. I know it's a tough job for officers. I know. But, you know, they got to look at the situation and try to make it as best they can. And Cap trying to shine a light on this on social media for the last 6 months. And he's been trying, tweeting, Instagram, not getting the response that he wanted to because seemingly nobody cares. So he took it a step further. Now, I'm not sure if I agree with the, you know, sitting at the national anthem. I know that some people see that as being very disrespectful, but Colin chose a medium and a delivery to make sure he got everyone's attention. Did it work? 100% it did. Everyone's talking about it.
He's got everyone's attention, that's for sure.
Oh, 100%. He's got everyone's attention. He's got the platform. He can talk about these issues. Whether or not anything gets done, I'm not sure. But
what does he expect to happen? What's the response he's looking for? I understand there's social injustice in the world. There always has been. You know, we're living in one of the most peaceful times on earth, and yet there's still atrocities committed every day. We get that. What does he want to see, or do you know? Can you speak to that? I mean, I don't know that if there's an end game where everyone holds hands and sings Kumbaya. I understand there's the situations you mentioned, awful. But I don't think there's a quick fix where you just, oh, there's a law passed and everything's better now.
Yeah, I don't think there's a quick fix either. I think that this is a deep-rooted issue that is going to take some time and is going to take some. But I mean, if they aren't seemingly worried about it right now, I mean, he has to get things started, right? I think that's what he's hoping to do is get people talking about it, and I think that's worked. I mean, you look at the last, you know, I made that post yesterday. I've heard from half a dozen of the Calgary Stampeders been texting me, talking to me about it, and it's got people talking about these issues. And
yeah.
You know, hopefully it's going to help, you know, when the next time maybe a police officer does something that's out of line, instead of getting paid leave, he ends up in jail or he ends up, you know, getting a more severe sentence than what he was getting before.
Fair. Thoughts on Kaepernick, the football player? Does this hurt his ability to be a number one quarterback? Do you believe he can still be an elite quarterback? I don't know how you assign credit, but he was very good with Harbaugh. He's been really bad since. There's a whole lot of other parts that are connected as well, including the O-line, a bad GM. Where's he at as a player?
I think he's all right as a player. I mean, he had a bad offseason in that he had 3 offseason surgeries. So what that tells me is that he had surgery on his shoulder, his thumb, and his knee. So last year he got sacked, I believe, 28 times in 8 games.
Yeesh.
So you're getting sacked almost 4 times a game. I mean, Bull Levi Mitchell, that's probably 3 seasons it takes him to get sacked that much.
Yeah.
But Collins getting hit and hit hard, and he was playing hurt last year and trying to play hurt and trying to help his team win. And now he spent the offseason in surgery, and, you know, he came back. He looks a lot skinnier than he usually is because he wasn't able to work out as much as he wanted to. Is Collins going to be the great quarterback he was in, you know, 2012, 2013? I'm not sure, but I think that he has the ability to get back to that level. I mean, once he gets out there, gets strong, gets healthy, he's got a better offensive line now in San Francisco. He doesn't have the weapons around him that I'd like him to have, but, you know, if he gets an opportunity to play and, you know, he can run the ball and do everything he wants in, you know, Chip Kelly's offense, he might be a great fit.
I'm just right off the top of my head. We have an open spot in our fantasy football league. Jay, you're the producer here. We already have McBride in, and we love having McBride on. He does the Roughneck Show. I feel like if Johnny Bender wanted to join our Sportsnet 960 Fantasy League, would that be an option? Would he be a finalist, Jay? Do you think that's a good move?
If Bender wants in, he's in right now.
Bender, you want in? Are you already loaded up?
Take your money. I'll gladly do it.
I don't know how much money it'll be, but it'll be on-air bragging rights, which is almost better.
All right, bragging rights are better.
Bender's in. There's your 12th team in the league. Problem solved.
Perfect.
We were flirting with having Kirsch in. That's just a horrible idea. We can't do it.
I'm way better than Kirsch.
the league can get better. I know that for sure. Hey, good stuff as always. I love that you speak candidly on things that you do. It's really easy to sit on the sidelines and not have an opinion, and Kaepernick hasn't done that. You spent a long time protecting him in Nevada, and I respect you sticking up for your guy who, as you were alluding to, is trying to shed light on some issues that are there. Thanks for your thoughts as always. We'll talk next week.
All right, for sure. Thank you.
John Bender joins us on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Satisfy your craving for a flame-grilled burger with fresh-cut fries. Visit the new location now open in East Hills at 17th Avenue and Stony Trail Southeast. We'll come back with the text line. Lots there. Don't miss it. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I was really stressing about that, Jay. Who's going to be the 12th team in the Sportsnet Fantasy Football League? I believe we're called the Sportsnet 960 Radio Hacks. That's the league name. But I feel like it was right in front of my eyes the whole time. So while I'm scouring the world for the perfect 12th team, I'm like texting John, hey, can you come on tomorrow? What do you want to talk about? Like, hello, Pinder. Hello, McFly. Right in front of your eyes the whole time.
Probably ups the respectability factor of our league.
Yeah, there's no more free squares in the bingo card. Love Lou and love Kerr, but they weren't setting their lineups. Like, some guy's been injured since week 3, starting for them in week 16. You're like, no, you can't do this. That would be a lie, because, of course, week 16 would be playoffs. No way those two teams got there. And we have one member who's no longer a member of the league. So there was an opening. There we go. Jason's beard better be ready for Bender's something or others.
I believe it's beard science.
Oh, that's right. You did do the little tweak there. And that is a good name.
I wonder if Bender's all about the fantasy. Whether you know, he'll have the good nickname and...
Yeah, he'll have an icon.
The logo, yeah.
He'll have the picture of like either him playing at Nevada or like Bender from the cartoon. Right? That would be, that would make sense.
Bender?
Lots of texts coming in. My goodness, I feel like we could do an hour here on these. First off, we touched on Gaudreau and the lack of a contract with Darren Haynes right out of the gate. This will all be podcasted, Jay, I imagine. This is what we do. Now, where's the best place to look? Is it the on-demand for just Haynes with Pinder, or is it to go to the Pinder show and then have the whole hour there to stream?
Either way.
Either way, both there. Great. Love that. So we started with the Gaudreau, and I sort of had an issue with Haynes suggesting, well, you know, he's a smaller guy. Maybe he gets injured. Well, let me make myself very clear. Every single player in the NHL is at risk for injury. But to suggest Johnny is more at risk for injury is to completely ignore his past. There's a lot of people that disagreed with that. Some people who agreed. Here's a good text. Small players get injured more often. Signed, Eric Lindros. Right? And that's my point. It's not the size of the guy getting crushed by Scott Stevens. It's who's looking at his feet in the neutral zone, right? Scott Stevens is going to hurt anyone there. He nearly ends Lindros' career, or maybe effectively does, I suppose. I had mentioned Johnny didn't get injured in junior. Junior Pinder, wouldn't that be when he played in college? Well, he actually played in the USHL for Dubuque. 60-game season. Played? 60 games. So, yeah. Didn't get injured there. And again, he was tiny in junior. Tiny. And that's not the Western League. It's not, you know, it's a younger league because a lot of guys go to college through there. But full seasons pretty much every year. So let's go back to the 2013-14 season. 40 games for Boston College. Played all 40. 3 years in college. Pretty darn healthy. Year one in the NHL. Got scratched once. Missed 3 games his second year of college. Whew, 3 games. And his first year played all 44 at college. He's been healthy. And I understand this idea, this concept of like, well, if it's a smaller, more fragile thing, it's going to get hurt more easily. Yeah, except this guy's gift is his slipperiness, right? Like, how many times have we seen this guy get absolutely clobbered? I feel like it's once a year. That's it. There's some bigger players that take huge punishment. And I don't want to just keep using the Lindros thing, but if you had built a human that could sustain incredible damage and wear and tear, it's Lindros. And there's the guy whose career was cut short by injuries. So I understand you want to think smaller guys are more fragile. It's just, I don't know that you can prove it with numbers, you know, like facts. If he's elusive with the puck, why would he be getting into these huge collisions? I mean, he's not digging in the corner, getting run down by faster defensemen. That is not where this guy operates. He's slippery. Another take on Johnny. $12 million over 3 years isn't financial security. Why wouldn't... I understand it's not as much as $60 million, but $12 million sets you up in your ancestors for life. So someone just saying, look, like Johnny could give a whale of a deal to the Flames and come in at low money. Well, here's the thing. If you had $60 million, would you give away 48, Jay? Like, if you had $60 million, would you give away 48 because 12 was enough? No, you wouldn't give away $48 million. You'd probably keep most of it. And again, Johnny isn't negotiating to be a nice guy. He has an agent doing it for him. Do you think an agent's worrying about feelings, or do you think an agent's trying to maximize value? He's trying to get as much dough as he can. And that's the other notion. Well, Johnny should just, you know, call the agent and say, get a deal done. No. Johnny's agent calls him and says, I'm going to get you as much money as I can over the course of your career. That's my job. Nothing else matters. That's why you hire him to negotiate for you. He's good at that. If you want to give hometown discounts, why get an agent? Right? The Kaepernick stuff's really interesting, too. And Kaepernick's just not going to win on this because a lot of people in many countries get upset when you don't rise for the anthem. But in America, whew. And a lot of people have immediately, like I saw some other players around the NFL lashing back. People are serving our country. I get it. I don't think he's sitting for the anthem to upstage the military. We understand that. He's trying to shed light on social issues that he has an issue with. But that's a tough spot. I don't know how he wins. Know what I mean? Hey, Pinder, Peter Klein proves bigger guys get injured more often. That's true. Klein's been concussed. He's always hurt, isn't he? Klein's a hurt bag.
Yeah, I wouldn't sign him too long.
Jeez. Hey, dummy. Johnny's a smaller hockey player. Yes, he may avoid hits well, but all it takes him to get Scott Steven, boom, he's done for his career. Concussion issues for life. He's smaller guys. Smaller guys don't take hits well. See, I know that you believe that. I just don't think you can prove that. Like, you really believe that text. I know that. You believe it to be true. It's just not. Right? Lindros is the guy that got Scott Stevens. That's the example you're giving me. Does that not just defeat your own argument? Johnny is a little pender. There's a higher chance of injury, regardless of how elusive he is. It's probability. You as a stats guy should understand that. What I'm suggesting is his track record is that of being healthy. That's probably what you should be looking at. Now, there are small guys that are injury prone. There are big guys that are injury prone. There are big guys that are durable. There are small guys that are durable. He's proven to be a small guy that's durable. I'm just looking at things that have happened in his life. Hey, guys, super complicated issue Cap's trying to tackle. Kudos to him for trying to get a debate on, you know, civil affairs going. If people in positions of responsibility and authority start talking and thinking about these issues, maybe something could be started. Cap's a really well-spoken guy, and he's got a platform. Hopefully he can act as a leader on this issue. It seems there hasn't been one for a long time. That's an interesting text, a good one. Everyone gets hurt if they get Scott Stevens. That coming in from Jamie. Yes, that's exactly my point. So what you want to be is a player that doesn't look at your feet while you skate with the puck. That's Johnny. Johnny is not gazing at his laces through the neutral zone. Lindros was. Had nothing to do with size. It had everything to do with avoiding contact. Pinder, I agree with you, but please don't tempt the hockey gods, please. Yeah, it's true. All it takes is me railing on Johnny being durable for him to be out for the season with a toe after blocking a shot or something stupid. I don't think it's America thing, Pinder. It would be a huge issue if some hockey player sat out of Canada too. No, I agree. I just mean it's magnified even more, right? That league, that country, I don't know that there's a more patriot nation than America. And it's what part of what makes it great. And it's part of what makes it a little bit weird sometimes. But you go to the States, there's a flag on everything. There's five flags on a lot of things. You could have a bloody gas station and you might have 15 flags. They're uber patriotic. It's how they are. It's how they roll. We don't do it exactly the same way, but when you sit in the anthem in the U.S., it gets noticed. I don't want to say more, but it draws a lot more backlash is what I'll say. That's it. I think we're cooked, boys. Fun to be back in the saddle. Glenn Moradi's Pinder in the morning, 9 till 10 every morning. Jim Rome Show is next. We got a busy week coming at you. And yes, just a week away from the return of old Retzky. Gotta love it. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.